Welcome to Let's Finally Watch This, a podcast for casual movie fans who have always meant to watch classic movies. I'm your host, Nick Hayden.
And I'm your other host, who is not horse, Timothy Deal.
Yes, it is. Well, I'm not a horse either. But
but you sound a little
I know,
extra.
There's something a little... This morning I was trying to do, like, say something, I'm like... Like, it was, like, just a silent. I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
Maybe your early cold.
Who knows?
I don't know. Well, anyway,
we'll get through this.
You're still Nick.
I'm still Nick. I'm still here. I'm still going to talk a little bit. Hi, welcome. It is 1994.
That's right. Again, we are still within our lifetime span. We haven't gone backwards anymore. We were still alive in 1994.
Yep, I'm almost 14.
And I was about 10 for most of this year.
Yeah. And we're tackling Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump.
A little movie you may have heard of if you lived through the 90s.
Probably, yes. I certainly heard of it, but I never saw it myself. I mean, well, I was 10 when it came out. So
yeah, why would you?
Yeah, it just wasn't the age. And I mean, a lot of people saw it in the years afterwards, but honestly, I'm kind of glad I didn't until now. Essentially. I mean, maybe in a film school would have worked, but this was a good time to watch it. But we'll get into that.
We'll get into that. Okay, so what are we going to talk about in the 90s here, Tim?
Let's find out. Well, we don't have a whole lot, actually, to recap from previous episodes. When we were talking about the 90s in the film, we talked about how this is a continuation of the blockbuster age.
Yep.
We looked at how, even though it was blockbusters, there's a good variety of stuff coming out.
Yeah, the 90s just seemed to have all sorts of genres going on. I mean, like, in Forrest Gump is... a lot of different stuff at once in the same way.
That's true. We've looked at some of the indie filmmakers who kind of came into their own during the late 80s, early 90s. We're not really in early 90s anymore, I'd say, 94. But we'll just note that. And last season, we talked about the boom of the multiplexes, how that was kind of going on right now.
So they can show all the movies.
Yes.
And there's a lot of them.
Yeah. That was part of a whole thing we were talking about, film exhibition last season a lot. So I don't have a whole lot of extra stuff. We'll cover a little bit more about 90s and film, but I thought this would be an interesting episode to talk a little bit more about what was going on in the rest of the world in the 90s.
Okay.
Because we haven't really talked a lot about that, and this movie touches on what's going on in America.
American history, during certain eras.
Yeah. So I just thought it'd be interesting to kind of cover that. It's funny to think about the 90s from our perspective when we were growing up in it. It's your childhood. It's your a time of innocence, sort of. And in some ways, it was for the world, too. I mean, like, there was a good economy during the 90s. Yep. We had won the Cold War.
It was over.
Namely, you know, ostensibly.
There's generally peace in the world.
Generally. I mean,
there's some Bosnia, Serbia stuff. I don't know when that started.
Yeah, that was going on. The Bosnian War was going on. I mean, on the flip side, you had South Africa had just ended apartheid, and this year Nelson Mandela gets elected as president.
Okay.
On the flip side, this year, 94, is also when the Rwandan genocide took place.
Okay, yep.
In America, like, on the one hand, again, things are relatively pretty good, but I remember there being a lot of angst among conservatives at the time because we had recently lost the president, the White House. And there was concern about, you know, moral things, you know, going downhill. There are a couple of scandals going on this year, marked the Nancy Kerrigan,
and
Tanya
Olympics.
Harding thing.
And there'll be other scandals in the 90s.
Yeah, this year also marked the saw the arrest of O.J. Simpson.
Okay, yeah.
That'd be a whole thing that was going to go on for a while.
Yes.
And it's funny, I listened to a podcast not that long ago where a guest who is, I would guess, lean more progressive, talk about the 90s as being kind of a crass, kind of vulgar decade in some ways.
Okay.
And if you think about like some of the commercials, because I've seen commercials on video game YouTubers that sometimes show commercials for old video games that came out. Yeah. And it's funny, some of these kids' commercials are very in your face and kind of, you know, this is the era where Jim Carrey movies and his...
Yep.
Brand of crass comedy is a big deal.
I might misplace about Beavis and Butthead becomes MTV, that sort of...
Ren Stimpy.
Yeah, Ren Stimpy.
It's fun to think like Nickelodeon having like Ren and Stimpy on during the day, but at night you got Nick at Night, which is like all these wholesome 50s sitcoms. So I think there's a little bipolar sort of thing going on. Like, and I don't know if that's like a generational thing, like what they expected for the Gen Xers and what baby boomers were doing. Because like this is a time when the youngest of baby boomers were becoming middle aged.
Yeah.
They had gone through the tumult of the 60s and 70s. And like the ones like, well, basically, I realized Forrest Gump's, if you look at Forrest Gump's age, and it's same as the age of some of the screenwriters, those born in the late 40s. We're basically entering their 40s here in the 90s. So the kind of, I mean, we still have baby boomers who are around, obviously, now, yeah. including our parents. At least my parents were at the very end of the baby boom generation, mm-hmm. I think. But that's considered a very wide, big generation. But anyway, I'm getting lost in the weeds here a little bit. So all that to be said, this is kind of a peaceful time, but there's certain, like, uneasiness under the surface, I feel.
And I wonder, like, you see with movies, like, 80s blockbuster, and then you have a variety coming out in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I always get the sense reading older, like, books from the 80s, like, everyone was kind of afraid of just this massive, like, consumption era. Like, the economy grew, and it was very materialistic.
Yeah.
Like, the 90s trying to work
through some of that.
Like,
yeah.
Like, in good and bad ways. Yeah.
I mean, if you think about at the end of the decade in 99 is when we had the movie Fight Club, which mm-hmm. is considered a kind of a Generation X tirade against basically consumerist society of like, we don't have any battles to fight anymore. We just shop now, basically.
Yeah.
Well, we would get our battles in a few years later with 9/11, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but which would kind of shatter the peaceful nature. But yeah, it's kind of like a, well, we found success in the world.
Now what?
What do we do with it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just kind of my vibe just when I was thinking through this stuff. Because the 90s, I feel like, haven't really been, like, given a labeling by historians and commentators yet. Like, 60s, 70s, we know revolutions going on.
Yeah.
90s is, I don't know. I haven't seen a whole lot of retrospection about it yet. Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that.
But shifting back to film, what was going on in film in 1994 specifically, this year Viacom acquired 50.1% of Paramount Communications. So I think Paramount and Viacom are still connected today.
Okay.
TCM started, Turner Classic Movies, started as a cable channel.
That makes sense, yeah.
The first movie they showed on April 14th was Gone with the Wind.
Not surprisingly, no.
And on October 12th of this year, DreamWorks is founded by Steven Spielberg, Jeffrey Katzenberg, and David Geffen.
I remember one of the first DreamWorks movies I watched, it might have been their first actual feature film, was Mouse Hunt.
Mouse Hunt?
It's kind of hilarious.
I've seen parts of it. I don't know if I've ever watched the whole thing.
But that was an early one, I know.
Yeah.
That and Prince of Egypt.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was the days when they were doing live action and animated. These days, I think it's primarily known as an animated company.
That's what I see most of, yeah.
Yeah, they've kind of, I'm not sure the live action thing is quite the same as it was. It's been kind of sold off and affiliated with various different companies.
They're celebrating their 30th then, right?
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that is notable. Highest grossing film of the year was The Lion King.
Not surprisingly. That just swept the theaters back then.
That was a juggernaut for sure. At the Academy Awards, Best Film, Best Director, and Best Actor all went to this week's movie, Forrest Gump.
Also not surprisingly.
Yep. So Best Director went to Robert Zemeckis, and of course Best Actor was Tom Hanks.
Yes.
No surprise. Best Actress went to Jessica Lange for a movie called Blue Sky, which I had never heard of.
No, I don't know.
So sorry, Jessica. I'm sure it was great. Perhaps, maybe.
You did a great job in it anyways.
Yeah, apparently. Someone thought you did. that's mean.
Now we're going to get angry emails from
just all the Jessica Lange fans.
Yes. All right, well, give us a rundown of this movie for people who may not know anything about it.
Sure, yes. Forrest Gump. This is what do we even call this thing? A comedy drama of sorts. It is based on a novel by Winston Groom, which became way more famous after this movie came out.
I sure did, yes.
Yes, this was a very successful movie for 1994. In fact, it was the second highest grossing film of the year after Lion King. Here's some interesting facts pulled from the Wikipedia article. For the first 12 weeks of release, the film was in the top three of the box office, topping the list five times, including in its 10th week of release.
Wow. It seemed like it'd be one of those word-of-mouth ones. Like,
yeah.
You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Yeah, I see what you did, accidentally.
Yes.
I mean, and this is also the period where movies just stayed in theaters a lot longer. It was released in the summer of 1994, wasn't pulled out until January of the next year. And then it got put back in February of 1995, after the Academy Award nominations were announced.
Wow.
And it earned an additional $29 million after it was reinstated, basically bringing its total to $329.7 million, making it the third highest grossing film at that time, behind only E.T. the Extraterrestrial and Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Apparently, The Lion King made more money in 1994, but given the reissue, it took it over the limit there.
Okay.
It overtook it. And it was pretty successful with critics, too, although I have noticed that audiences seem to like this one slightly more than the critics. Currently, on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a popcorn meter, the audience meter, of 95%.
Wow.
Whereas the tomato meter rating is 76%.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that I did find that interesting. One of the critics who did love it, though, was Roger Ebert. And it's been a while since we heard from Roger Ebert.
Yeah, we used to do him pretty regularly.
Yeah, so I thought his opening of his review, I thought, was worth sharing. He said, "I've never met anyone like Forrest Gump in a movie before. And for that matter, I've never seen a movie quite like Forrest Gump. Any attempts to describe him will risk making the movie seem more conventional than it is, but let me try. It's a comedy, I guess. Or maybe a drama. Or a dream." It says that the screenplay has the complexity of modern fiction, but not the formulas of modern movies. Its hero, played by Tom Hanks, is a thoroughly decent man with an IQ of 75 who manages between the 1950s and 1980s to become involved in every major event in American history, and he survives them all with only honesty and niceness as his shields. And he goes on to note that Tom Hanks may be the only actor who could have played this role.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about him playing the role as when we do our discussion.
But yes, I can certainly empathize with him how do you categorize this thing?
It's a strange little beast. Yeah.
And it is impressive for a professional movie critic who has seen as much as Roger Ebert to say, "I've never seen something quite like this." The ones who aren't quite as fond of it think it's a little bit on the...
Smaltzy? No, I don't
know. A little smaltzy.
Saccharine.
A little too sweet. 10 years later, in Entertainment Weekly said, "Nearly a decade after it earned gazillions and swept the Oscars, Robert Zemeckis' ode to 20th century America still represents one of cinema's most clearly drawn lines in the sand. One half of folks see it as an artificial piece of pop melodrama, while everyone else raves it's as sweet as a box of chocolates."
Yep, I could see that.
Yeah, that makes some sense to me. But it is popular enough. It obviously won a lot of Oscars,
yes,
and it landed on several American Film Institute lists on their top 100 movies and ranked at number 71.
Nice.
For 100 movie quotes, the quote that got included was this one.
"My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get."
That very famous line got ranked at number 40. Honestly, I think there's a lot of other quotes that could have made it on here.
It is
easily
a very quotable movie. I mean, yeah.
It's surprising in some ways that only one man made it on the list. But that's a classic. Everyone knows that line.
Yeah, it is.
"My name's Forrest Gump. People call me Forrest Gump."
"Run, Forrest, run!"
"I'm as stupid as a stupid does."
"That's all I have to say about that."
On their list of 100 Cheers, which are inspirational movies, it ranked at number 37.
Okay.
And on the 10th anniversary of their 100 movies list, it moved from 71 to 76.
Oh, so well, held pretty good then.
It held pretty strongly. And it is in our National Film Registry. Entered in there in December of 2011. And is also ranked number 61 on Empire's list of 100 greatest movies of all time.
Okay.
So it is a pretty well-known and pretty well-remembered movie, I would say.
And there's sayings still that you could say and people like know exactly where it's from. Besides the famous one, there's just a number of them.
I mean, there was, even though I hadn't seen it, I was surprised at how accurate Weird Al's song about Forrest Gump actually was. I thought for sure, for a long time, that he had just made up stuff about things he told American presidents. But no, Forrest Gump actually does. Show LBJ his butt and other things.
Why not, I guess. I guess real quick, we should probably just talk about Robert Zemeckis as a director, because he did a lot of things that I did not realize he did.
Yes, and it's funny because he's one of those directors, if you'd asked me to name him, I'd probably be searching. It's like, is that the Back to the Future guy? It's probably the thing he's best known for, but he's made a lot of well-known movies, but he's not necessarily a household name unless you're a real movie buff guy. Yeah. I think he's just one of those that kind of fades in the background.
Like you watch his movies, you like it, but you don't think of him himself, which maybe is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, as a director.
And I don't know if that's because he's done a number of blockbusters and not, he's not like cinephiles sort of auteur.
We felt like this was the same with Jon Favreau. Like, he'd done all kinds of stuff, but no one until recently thought much about him.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure people in the film industry do. Yeah. I mean, we talked about him a little bit last episode with Romancing the Stone, directly into the Back to the Future trilogy. He also directed Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, what, really? Okay, yeah. He likes to kind of meld technology in interesting ways.
He does. Like,
Forrest Gump does that. Mm-hmm. Roger Rabbit does that. I know he said he also did Polar Express.
Yes, he was very instrumental. He had his hands a lot in motion capture stuff in the early 2000s. He did the Polar Express, Beowulf, the Jim Carrey, A Christmas Carol adaptation. His studio that did that stuff had a big box office bomb that's not a film that he directed, but I think he executive produced, called Mars Needs Moms.
I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah, it was a huge bomb. And so I think he kind of had to transition back into doing more live action after that. Things like Flights with Denzel Washington, mm-hmm. Welcome to Marwen. And this year, actually, I think the week before this episode is scheduled to come out, if I remember right, is his movie called Here.
Which looks very fast and very interesting concept.
Yes, very interesting concept with Tom Hanks again. And I think is the actress who plays Ginny, Robin Wright, from this movie. He also directed Castaway and What Lies Beneath. So he's got a good history with Tom Hanks.
It's interesting. You know, everyone always thinks that we did James Cameron an episode ago. Uh-huh. And he's always known as the guy who likes to do technology and film, but Zemeckis does it in his own way.
Yeah,
in a lot of respects.
Yeah, he has his own talent for it. It would seem between, I mean, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, obviously, but also even I saw someone point out in Back to the Future has some scenes of Doc Brown interacting with historical figures.
Oh yeah,
which kind of feels like a foreshadowing of what's going on with Forrest Gump in this movie. Speaking of, shall we get back to Mr. Gump himself?
Yes, let's go.
So this film starts off, of course, with Forrest Gump sitting on a park bench in Savannah, Georgia, narrating his life to whoever happens to stop by at the bus stop and listen to him. Fun fact, I just heard on the World and Everything In It podcast a few weeks ago that apparently it's a popular question for tourists in Savannah, Georgia to try to find this bench.
Oh.
They want to know where the bench is, and there's not actually a bench there. They created this bus stop for the movie.
Okay.
But everyone wants to take pictures on this bench. Which is funny.
Some guy should go put a bench there and make a lot of money.
Well, apparently, there was some coffee shop that had a bench, and some found out that customers were just obsessed with it, even though I don't know if it's not actually in the park where that scene was shot. But Savannah, Georgia is a beautiful city, folks. You should check it out for things besides the Forrest Gump bench. Anyway, but we hear about how Forrest grew up, how his mother obtained through illicit means, basically a way to help him attend a regular school because she really didn't want him to miss out on any opportunities because he had a low IQ, and growing up in 1951, you know, that's not super well respected.
Yeah.
But somehow Forrest found out he had a real talent for running, and that enabled him to play for Alabama football.
Yep.
And honestly, there's kind of a pattern of Forrest's life of him just kind of stumbling into success.
Yes.
We also see his misadventures in joining the Army and going to Vietnam.
Playing
ping pong for the Army all across the world after he had won a Purple Heart. The many times he gets to visit the White House because of the success of his football team or the Purple Heart or et cetera. All these interesting, surprising success he has over his life. Apparently, in the novel, he's even more of a savant in some ways.
Okay.
They kind of tone that aspect down a little bit.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But an important part of all this is Forrest trying to get together with his girl.
Childhood friend.
Yeah. Named Ginny, who had been kind to him on the bus, and then they were good friends for a long time. But over time, Ginny doesn't seem interested in pursuing a romantic relationship with Forrest, probably because he is a little slow.
Yeah.
And Ginny winds up throwing herself into bad situation after bad situation,
yes,
probably in part because she had grown up with an abusive father.
Yes.
Both kinds of abusive father. Yeah. And kind of messed her up for a while. And so while she is going on this downward struggle, Forrest is kind of on this upwards trajectory, being basically, like Roger Ebert said, a pretty nice guy.
And he becomes a millionaire.
Yeah, yeah.
For a variety of reasons.
So it's hard as movie to summarize. It's kind of like a slice of life, or at least like a slice of life that takes place over the course of 30 years.
Yeah. At the end, it's about Forrest and Ginny and
their relationship.
How does the relationship change, grow, blossom, fill in the blank.
Yeah, yeah. And along with this, we see a lot of the what was going on in America at the time,
yes,
and the turmoil and things that it goes through. Forrest somehow touches on a lot of these things without meaning to, which ironically is one reason why it's taken me so long to watch this. Because I remember when my folks watched it when I was a kid, they were like, and later mom told me they found it very depressing in some ways to see kind of the bad directions the country had gone over the course of the movie.
Yeah, all the trauma the country's going through.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And so that was one reason why I kind of put off watching it for a long time, even though I know my grandmother liked it. But I feel like my grandmother enjoyed almost any movie that was took place at least partially in the South.
Okay.
Because she's from the South, so she appreciated that. But that being said, finally saw it now. So anything else we need to touch on next?
I think that's a good thumbnail sketch of it. So okay. I think we're ready for our 12-minute discussion of this movie.
Yes.
Whatever you want to call it. Comedy, yes. Dramedy.
A movie that defies genre in some ways. All right. 12 minutes is going on the clock, starting now.
Mom always said there's an awful lot you can tell about a person by their shoes. Where they going. Where they been. I've worn lots of shoes. I bet if I think about it real hard, I could remember my first pair of shoes. Mama said they'd take me anywhere.
All right, I guess I should start this one off since I'm the one who has
Yeah, I was
going
to say, you need to start this one because normally, yeah.
Yeah, this was, I wound up enjoying it more than I expected because I know you were a little mediocre on it. My parents were, and it took me even a little bit to warm up to it, but it is fascinating because, yeah, you don't know what to make of Forrest sometimes. And sometimes I did kind of question, like, you know, where is he mentally speaking? Because it is a little confusing. Like, they don't diagnose that he has any sort of condition like they would say nowadays.
Yeah.
We don't know if he has autism or anything like that. They just say that his IQ is like 75 and on the low side. And he seems a little slow. But
sometimes he's slower than other times.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if you could call foul on that. But I mean, I guess people are inconsistent in that sort of way, too. Like, for example, when he's narrating, telling about Jenny's childhood, and he says, oh, her dad loved her so much, he touched her and hugged her and did all these things, and you're like, ugh. But later, he seems to have a pretty clear understanding that Jenny's dad was bad, or her home life was really bad. So, but it's weird, like, he's as an adult, he's narrating that kind of childish perspective. But
he's almost like narrating what he thought back then versus,
Yeah, so I could see calling foul a little bit of like kind of the inconsistency, but again, people are inconsistent. And it is fascinating. I know you had said one of the things that you had frustrated you upon first watching it was Jenny.
Yeah.
And it is interesting that Forrest has this successful life by being basically
He just does what he does.
He just does what he does. He's not bucking trends in some, like, honestly, some people might accuse him of he's living an all-American dream. He plays football and is a football star of the sorts.
He's a war hero.
He's a war hero. He's a successful businessman.
Great investments.
Accidentally.
Yeah.
So he does like all the quote-unquote right things, but he's not marked by, I mean, he has ambition. Like, his whole idea about going to business after the war is he had a friend who died during the war who knew all about the shrimp business and wanted to get his friend involved in the shrimp catching business. And life just somehow rewards him for that. And I've seen some on the Wikipedia article talks about how some people really saw this as a very conservative movie.
Okay.
Whereas Forrest does the righteous thing, but then whereas Jenny follows the very progressive left, like protesting thing,
going
to drugs, a very salacious life.
All the parts of American culture, like, why did we go that way? She's part of that part of the culture.
Yeah, yeah. And Forrest is kind of like, she kind of dismisses him at times because, like, you don't understand what love is, was my wife Janelle said, no, she was the one who probably didn't really understand what love is.
Yeah.
Every man she was with, as far as we could tell, before Forrest, other than Forrest, was using her.
Yeah.
And Forrest keeps trying to protect her, and she won't have it.
In some ways, she knows too much, and he knows too little. And it works against her and for him.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard for me to believe that this is meant as a conservative movie, given that the Robert Zemeckis, according to Wikipedia, has supported Democrats all his life. Yeah. And Tom Hanks himself called it an unpolitical movie, like he's saying he doesn't judge. And I can see that in the sense of, you know, some people just kind of assume that part of being a teenager and growing up is rebelling.
Yeah.
That they just have this assumption that you have to go into this crazy lifestyle of drugs and promiscuousness. That's just the way we have to work through it.
And it's just a consequence. She was given a hard lot, and therefore that's just a natural way she's going
to
go.
Yeah. And you can sort of see that. And you said, like, your first time watching it, you were frustrated. This time you had a little bit more empathy for
her. You're like, man, you just feel horrible. I mean, she's had it's a rough go all around. Like, and she can't seem to find a way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Will you marry me? I'd make a good husband, Jenny.
You would, Forrest.
But you won't marry me.
You don't want to marry me.
Why don't you love me, Jenny? I'm not a smart man, but I know what love is.
When I was thinking about the whole baby boomer thing, and again, seeing how Forrest Gump himself was a baby boomer, he must have been like six in 1951 or elementary school age, clearly. I can't help but wonder, this is my own interpretation on it, and you can see what you think. It almost feels like this is what he's the sort of person that baby boomers kind of wish they could be. Like, if you didn't have to go through all that tumult of rebellion, of protesting, of all that stuff. Because I've heard some even progressive people on podcasts and things like kind of talk like, yeah, I went through this very edgy emo phase and now I'm kind of back to, you know, at the end we see Jenny, she's kind of, it's not because of Forrest that she kind of found her footing. You kind of get the sense that she must have gone through drug rehab at some point.
Yeah, I think you could read that because someone gave her some space and time and attention and care that she's like, okay, I'm going to finally get myself put together.
Mm-hmm. And that's just, again, an interpretation, but like, I can't help but wonder if Forrest is kind of like, oh, if only we could be this kind and not have to worry about all this other stuff, maybe we could have had this life. But Forrest is who Forrest is. And there's also this whole theme about like, is it fate? Is it
destiny? Is it your own choices? Yeah.
Yeah. There's all these ideas. And
it doesn't really come down on that one either. Basically, like, well, the mom basically says it's destiny and your choices, which fine, but it doesn't help understand the movie any better necessarily.
Yeah. I feel like that could be the main critique people could have against this is that this is a movie that doesn't necessarily have a thesis.
Yes.
I don't feel like. And I can see this how this might have frustrated you back in the day. I'm sorry I'm talking a lot.
No, that's fine. I normally do a lot of talking here, so go for it.
I feel like I do a lot of talking, at least in the first half. But yeah, I had to pour all the stuff out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it doesn't have a thesis. It just has all these ideas. And sometimes that can be very frustrating. And I think if this movie was more destructive or deconstructionist, I would like it less. But it has such a heart to it.
It does have a life-affirming sense to it. Like, most people Forrest touches tend to be better for in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Lieutenant Dan and Jenny.
Yeah, Lieutenant Dan is a character we haven't talked a lot about, but it's like someone that Forrest saved in the war, and he was very resentful for Forrest.
Yeah.
Like, I was supposed to have died. I should have done that.
He really struggled
stuff.
With why is he alive and what God, and he kind of mocks about finding Jesus. And and then he does kind of have a peace with God, at least.
Yeah.
Forrest, I never thanked you for saving my life.
He never actually said so, but I think he made his peace with God.
Which is interesting. Even bringing God is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that fills in. We've complained on our other podcast, Your Old Trains of Thought, that a lot of movies don't talk about God.
And like, he doesn't, like, it's not even an important thing to people's lives, which is obviously not true for most of history.
Yeah. And so I certainly appreciate that they included it. And honestly, that he kind of had a reconciliation of sorts.
Yeah.
So like, he made peace with God. That's astonishing to me that in such a mainstream Hollywood movie that would even exist.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. So that's why I feel like I can totally see why people would say this is too sappy, too sentimental, and on all this kind of stuff. And like I said, it doesn't really have a thesis, which could be considered a weakness. But I don't know. There's a lot about it. And I had to process that. It's like, how much of it is a problem, this inconsistency of Forrest's character? Is it, you know, are they actually saying anything in all this? Like, what does it all mean? And I don't know. That's where I kind of came down on. Like, its weakness is that it's not trying to say something, but the strength is it's trying to explore a lot.
Yeah, and I think I liked it better than I remembered. First off, Tom Hanks just, I mean, the character Forrest Gump is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a very iconic character, and Tom Hanks does fabulous at it. And that idea that it's not really saying anything, I think this one's still, like, I like it better, but I'm still kind of ambivalent towards it. Mm. And I think it's just because someone's really funny, someone's really clever. It has a lot of nice scene. But at the end, I'm always, like, not sure what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jenny thing is better this time than last time. But it's just, like he's living his sort of, like, I fell into a happy life. And then she's self-destructive. And then she gets better, which is nice. But, like, I don't know. It's a weird... Sometimes I feel like it's the main plot, and sometimes it feels like it's a subplot, and I'm trying to figure out where that fits in everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just that, I think you put it well, it doesn't have a thesis, and I think that keeps me from loving it.
Sure.
Because it feels like a movie that's also trying to say something while also trying to escape from saying anything.
How would you compare it to another movie that touched on a lot of things?
Yeah.
Seven Samurai.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. Oh, that's a really good question.
Because that movie touched on a lot of things, but also in the very factual, like, the big difference is that presented things in just kind of a factual, like, this is the way it is,
I think. That is part of it. And also, in that movie, there tend to be two or three sides that would speak into it.
Mm, sure.
In this one, Forrest just, in some ways, exists in the different situations.
Mm,
in the, you know, the desegregation and then in the Vietnam War. Like, he's not making any commentary at all on it.
Yeah.
Which, again, is the strength of the movie. It's apolitical, mm-hmm. and it's a kind of a fun romp. But then there's other things. I think Jenny just makes everything more serious.
Yeah.
And then trying to know how to reconcile those two things. And maybe I'm just overthinking and just have a grudge on my... Like, take that with a grain of salt.
Well, I mean, it is curious because, like, Gump is in the middle of all this stuff, and yet we never really hear his perspective on it. It's like, the most we get from him is like, man, these people sure are mad about something.
Yeah.
It's like he doesn't get it.
And
or something.
And he doesn't have he really doesn't have an opinion on it, I don't think, because he just... It is what it is, you know?
Yeah. The only thing that he does seem to have a negative opinion towards is, like, anytime someone comes onto him sexually.
Yeah.
Aside from, like, well, one time with Jenny, but, like, they had gone through a lot.
Yeah, and some of the... And,
it feels different.
And some of the sexual stuff, I wish, like, we could do a little different, but that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Well, he does an opinion about protecting.
Right.
Protecting people and following through with promises. And I really admire that. He has some of that... We didn't have time. That sort of... He has some of that holy fool... what do we call that? Archetype.
Oh, sure.
I guess. The idea that, like, in literature, the foolish person also tends to know, just be a better person, know more than people who think they know stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it comes up all over the place.
Why are you so good to me?
You're my girl.
I'll always be your girl.
And he has some of that, but he doesn't fit exactly in that either. And I think the fact that he doesn't fit any archetype makes him so compelling.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it also makes him frustrating sometimes, too. Except I'm not frustrated with Forrest Gump himself. Like, I love Forrest. He's a great character all around.
Uh-huh.
Just sometimes how, you know, is he, or are we saying that, like,
Is he a I think you said after we watched it, is he a holy fool or a happy fool?
Yeah.
And that's a fair question.
And it's always trying to figure out.
An oblivious fool, yeah.
Yeah. Is he trying to, you know, like, is this saying something about how we should have treated all our American, you know, it goes through all these American turmoil and he's not affected by it. Is that trying to say something or is it just supposed to be taken as funny? It doesn't come down anywhere, which is, if you're overanalyzing it like I am, then you're like, but what am I supposed to do with this? But like you said, sometimes that's, you just exist. It is just,
it is what it is.
It's a box of cut chocolates. you take everything together and then it is what it is. That's all he's got to say about that. I mean, in some ways, I think that's not a bad, the thesis is, here it is.
Yeah.
In some ways.
That's all I have to say about that. Yeah.
If you take it like that, it is a fun romp.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that it can explore American history in this very sweet, tender kind of way.
Yeah.
Not every movie is striving to do that.
And
that's,
it should be giving props for that.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we're a little bit over time.
We are a bit over time. I turned you didn't hear the clock go off because we had to adjust for Nick coughing earlier.
Yes.
I will throw in one fact here before we give our final verdict. The screenwriter, the one who adapted the novel, is Eric Roth. And he has had a pretty long illustrious career. Some of his writing credits include Munich, a Steven Spielberg movie.
Or watch.
The recent Dune, at least part one.
Okay.
And then one movie that you will have a reaction to. The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Okay. No, and Gump and that share some DNA. I feel like Gump is better easily than we won't get into that. I just have a I have a chip on your shoulder for no good reason on that one. I feel like it's trying to be more important than it is.
I remember you had told me that before we watched it, and then when I was looking at his credits, like, oh, I'm gonna tell Nick about this. Yeah. That's fun. Yeah, so bottom line.
I mean, it is a fascinating character, a fascinating movie. There are some sexual situations, but it is kind of an iconic movie. I think if you haven't seen it, you probably should.
Yeah. Again, part of why I waited so long is to watch this is because I sort of felt like I knew it a lot. I knew a little bit about Jenny. I knew he had this journey through America. I knew a lot of the quotes, partly because of the Weird Al song, but I knew stupid is as stupid does. I knew... My name's Forrest. They call me Forrest Gump. You know, I knew a lot of that stuff, but I didn't have. It was fascinating to me to see all the stuff I didn't know, especially like the second half, like the last third of the movie. I had no idea what was going on.
It is all connected. It connects a lot of. I mean, yeah, it's all over. I mean, it goes through a lot of history.
Yeah, and for that, it was kind of a magical experience in some ways. Like, it was just fascinating. Like this thing, this piece of pop culture history that I knew, but I didn't know. Yeah. And I didn't know what I didn't know until I actually got to experience it. So for that reason, yeah, absolutely. I would recommend this.
For a casual movie fan, it's kind of,
yeah, this shot up near the top of my essentials list when we get to that.
Oh, interesting.
Near the end of the season. Like, yeah, no, this is very worth watching, both for the iconicness and for just things you'll find yourself thinking about afterwards. Okay. So there you go.
All right, I guess that's it for 1994.
That's all we have to say about that.
And thank you for listening. Feel free to check out our website, derailtrainsofthought.com.
For all kinds of podcasts
and all manner of things. Next time we'll be in 2004.
That's right, moving into the 21st century.
With Mean Girls.
Mean Girls. The sort of movie I don't think we've done at all on
the
show.
Nope. So it'll be a different experience.
It certainly will.
All right, until next time, this is Nick.
And this is Tim.
Adios.
Bye-bye.